Hi, this is Tanya Nayak, and you're listening to The Break. I've waited an entire year to share this very special episode with you. Here's why. When I first started my podcast over a year ago, it was pointed more in the direction of the hospitality industry and lessons in leadership. I think it was called Hospitality Unhinged or something like that. Well, now I've pivoted and it's called The Break. So it is a little bit of a different conversation. But naturally, when we're thinking about hospitality and lessons in leadership, who comes to mind? Yes, Chef Robert Irvine. You know him from Food Network, Restaurant Impossible, and many other shows as well, which I've had the pleasure of working with him on Restaurant Impossible for, are you ready for this? 12 years now. It's a dynamic in-person conversation from when we were on the road last year filming through the early stages of the pandemic. So you will hear us touch a little bit on what we were going through at that time. We're also joined by Gail Kim, Robert's badass wife. And speaking of badasses, our executive producer from Restaurant Impossible and Robert's work wife, Jill Littman. We chat about so many things from behind the scenes to Robert's personality, and we talk a lot about leadership. It's a very special episode to me because Robert truly is like a brother from another mother to me. I'm so excited for you guys to listen in on this dynamic conversation. We're in Billings, Montana. We just finished Restaurant Impossible last night. And from my world, I design restaurants. We own restaurants. I was working in restaurants my whole life. So I think there's a lot that I learned from it. But Robert, you're like the consummate perfect guest today because there's so much that you have to offer.
Wow. How do you follow that, right? Well, listen, the restaurant industry is really struggling right now, and it has been for, you know, the last 6 months, 11 million people out of work due to something that we didn't expect or nobody's ever seen before. So COVID-19, literally everything that we've done in Restaurant Impossible in years has changed because of COVID. Normally we fix restaurants and help people that have ruined their restaurants or their business through their own fault. Now, you know, all these 11 million folks in the restaurants are failing because of something we didn't know, COVID-19.
For you guys, though, it was really something different. And there is this sort of quarantine situation that happened to a lot of us who travel so much for work, and we got to experience life with our spouses and being home. How was that for you guys?
Here's the funny thing. Gail and I travel pre-COVID 345 days a year. So she's traveling on her own for work. I travel on my own for work. Then we get together. So we're always together, just not in the same rooms.
We didn't have to talk about it. It kind of just, we gave each other space. But we're also very fortunate because we do live in a spacious home. And we have an outdoor area that I was able to just sit outside and he could sit inside. And we never even spoke a word about it. We just gave each other space.
That's good.
I think that's, it just transitioned naturally from our normal lives because we are apart and then we're together. So I think we just kind of had those instincts.
Oh, I became very codependent on Brian. How are you guys, you and Paul?
I mean, my family, it was great. I've never spent that much time with my husband ever. Mm-hmm. And also to be able to spend that time with my kids was amazing.
I didn't know you were married. Sorry, Paul.
I've never been home that many days in a row, and it was really nice, I have to say.
Yeah. I seem to think that Brian is now, he's like pretending to dance the dance of joy that I'm back on the road again, but I think he's secretly in the fetal position crying.
Every one of our spouses is like, when is this going to be over?
But we all have the same types of relationships where we're all the females are very independent and strong and like our own time. So I think that's where the common
true.
Factor, right?
You hit the nail on the head. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Robert, I became quite a good cook. I did a lot of your recipes, your French toast, for example.
French toast is the number one downloaded recipe on Food Network's website.
Really?
Yeah. And we did that on Dinner Impossible, I don't know, 10, 12, 20 years ago. I don't know. But it is the most.
I made a Robert Irvine cheesesteak recipe over quarantine.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, the kids were interested in a Philly night, so... Yeah,
it's interesting because you're so about fitness, but all these comfort foods are the ones that everyone loves.
Yeah, we had some fun actually when COVID. COVID is tough, but we had some fun trying to educate people at home and take the mind off. Gail and I did some cooking, home videos and live cooking on Twitter.
Gail's a great cook.
No, she is actually. She does, I would say, 98% of the cooking when we're home. Right,
I kind of just keep it simple and healthy and flavorful. And luckily, Robert likes it.
He said to me, he told me that you're the better cook.
Well, that's not true, but okay.
Actually, you know.
She can cook. She can cook.
I'm the better wrestler.
Yes. That goes without
saying.
Let's not go into
that right now on this, because you know that's wrong.
Let's see. Let's have
it.
A match.
Let's get ready to rumble.
Do we have a sound effect for that?
We don't want to hear Robert Irvine whining and crying.
Wrong one.
Yeah, she hurts. She hurts when she plays.
Yeah. Well, I always feel like chefs are just happy if someone makes them a freaking peanut butter and jelly sandwich, and they'll be happy.
Well, not me. I'm not a peanut buttery guy. I love peanut butter in protein bars and stuff, but I'm not. I don't like Jill eat spoonfuls of it on the bus.
I don't think I trust you if you don't like peanut butter.
No, he likes plain old roasted chicken and mashed potatoes.
There's nothing wrong with plain old.
A very refined palate, Chef Irvine.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You guys are both just so humble all the time, and I feel like every single time somebody shows up to set, if they're a fan or a kid, for example, military, you will stop everything to spend time with them.
Last night was a really cool night. When we finished the restaurant, we took a lot of pictures, obviously, distance and whatever. But there were 30 people outside the restaurant, which on the way out stopped. We took pictures with everybody. Obviously, they were tested by Mike, you know, with the thermometer and all that sort of stuff.
And you also have that social distance selfie.
Yeah, always. We have them rules. But then we got to the bus, and there was a disabled young man who left the restaurant, came to the bus, and he was a big fan of Gail's, actually. Not so much of mine, but he was a bigger fan of Gail's. And he just wanted to take a picture and tell him, you know, hey, we love, for 10 years we've been watching you, and da-da-da-da-da. It was kind of cool. And Restaurant Impossible has such a broad base of people. And I said this yesterday. It could be somebody looking at your design, the food, me getting anger at somebody, the lessons learned, the teachings of, you know, when we put plates on the wall, there's 50,000 plates and that's your menu, and all these silly things that we come up with. But when viewers watch, and I'm talking about restaurant owners and families, they each get something different from it. And why did we paint this wall like that? And why do we put a chair rail there? And why do we put this particular chair? And I think that's always interesting to me, not only as a restaurateur, because we will go through airports, Gail and I, on the way somewhere, not so much recently, but and kids will run up. The kids will notice you before the parents do, right. And they're like, you know, and they're braver than the parents.
Oh, yeah. Kids have no filter. And I will say about Robert, in the beginning of our relationship, I really had to share him. I mean, I still do to this day, even more so, but I had more difficulty with it at the beginning. And I remember saying to him a long time ago, I say, can you just put aside one day for me on the road where you can just say, I'm sorry, this is my wife's day.
This is Gail day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And sure. I mean, I think he said, okay, I'm going to try. And it was like half a day in. And I said, you know what? Forget it. I said, because I could see their disappointment and I could see his guilt of how they were going to perceive that, even though it was a great,
I just had one.
Great
meaning,
yeah. And then so I said, you know what? Totally get it. And
he is the most gracious, for sure.
He
with
really
his fans.
Is.
I've never seen anybody so incredibly kind and gracious and not a jerk at all. And you would think Robert Irvine would be a jerk, but he's not. He's so incredibly nice to everybody who approaches him. The only time he asks people to wait, I'll attest to this, is when we're at the gym And he's in the middle of working out, yeah. And he'll say, I'm in the middle of working out. This is my time. Yeah. I will get you on the way out.
I was just about to tell you, we were just at the gym when we came back, and there was a young lady. It was her 50th birthday today. I was on the treadmill. She came up to me, and I said exactly that. If you wait till I'm finished, I would. So Gail went to get a bag, and I went to the woman and said, okay, I'm finished now. That's where you went. She took the picture. 50-year-old birthday today, it made her day.
I think that the combination of your background, being in the military and then being a chef. So you were a chef in the military, right? Is that how you
That's how I started
right? Yep. How that segues into the restaurant world is so fluid. And I think that people can learn so much from that mindset, because too many people get walked all over because they don't know how to command the ship. So,
and that's that. And you hear me say this all the time. In any business, I don't care what business you're in, and obviously I deal with the military still a lot today. The way the system, the kitchen system, was set up years ago, a brigade system was all just like the military. There was a head chef, there were sous chefs, et cetera, et cetera, and it's no different to the military. When you run a business, any business, you have to command the ship, as you say. I don't want a boss. You know, I want a leader. And the difference, and it's a fine line. If I asked you the question, I'm going to, what is your idea of what would you say a boss is and what would you say a leader is in a sentence?
What would I say? A bus is carrying.
A boss.
A boss.
Oh, a boss. He has a British accent.
A bus
accent.
Is carrying people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he has a British accent.
Oh. What's a bus? A bus carries people. That's what she said. Well done, Tanya Nair. I think I know you well enough to, you know, yeah,
I
really.
I'm sitting here picturing the bus.
Sorry, folks. Sorry, it's just Tanya Nair. It was moment a long, of memory loss.
A long couple last days. Yes. A boss, I think, is a job. I think a leader is a person. It's ingrained in who you are and how you... No, all wrong.
A boss is a person who tells you what to do, and a leader is a person who shows you what to do.
Isn't that what I just said, though, kind of?
No, not really.
No. And it's really different because you know, there are bosses of companies that are good at what they do in the financial realm, mm-hmm. and there are people that you know, I'm going to show you how to write Robert Irvine. You write it, I'm going to correct you. You write it three times, and you've got it. And I think that's the difference about what we do, and we pummel it. And I use this all the time when I say, well, okay, in the military, in the first 6 weeks, we give you a rifle. We tell you to strip it down, clean it, put it back together, and fire it in the dark, the wet, the cold. And by the way, when you can't see because we've got blinders or blinkers on you. Why do we do that? Because somebody else's life depends on it. Mm-hmm. At a time you don't really remember, right? So it's an automatic reaction to do it in your sleep. And that's what business is. We should know your profit and loss statement. We should know what money's going out. We should know how the decor looks. We know what we put back into business to keep it fresh and looking good. And we know everybody in your kitchen, your front of house, or your trucking business, whatever that is, we should know that. And weeks after weeks after weeks and years and months and whatever, we see on this show that people don't do that. And that's why they fail, because they take their eye off the prize and they think the restaurant is going to do its thing and it'll generate money. And you and I both know, we all know, that's not how it
works.
That's
not how it works. And Jill and I were just talking about how the people out there who just know how to cook a dish or cook a meal and they are good entertainers at home think that they can own and operate a restaurant. And it is just,
you know, the biggest failing business in the United States? Because of that, what ethnicity is that? Do you know?
Italian food.
Yeah, Italian. Because
are the most restaurants we've ever visited as Italian.
Because somebody feels at home that they make the best sauce, the best gravy, depending where you come from. Mm-hmm. Their mother told them they're great. They go out, they get a lease on a building, or a restaurant that's closed and it's already furnished and whatever. They start their business. They invite all their friends over. Yeah, party, eat. And then 6 months later, they call a restaurant impossible or somebody, or they go out of business because they've massed up so much debt and made no money. Mm-hmm. And they go out of business. And you're right. That's the biggest section that we've ever done is Italian.
And
right.
I think also people don't realize restaurants are a huge commitment. I mean, it's going to take up your life. And I'm just on the outside looking in watching Robert with all his different brands and types of businesses he's in. And I've always told him, I said, I wish the one thing you didn't have to have are restaurants, because it's just...
It's consuming.
It's time consuming, and you got to keep your eye on the ball, just like he said, and trust people if you're not there.
Well, that's a good point. That's a really good point. So how, Robert, do you juggle everything then? How, because I know your quality control is up here. Mm-hmm. Like your quality control is at the top. So if you can't physically be there, what's your advice for people?
We have 2,863 employees across what we do. So it's Fit Crunch bars, food, restaurants, distillery, et cetera, et cetera. And the key is, first of all, you find people that you trust because they're like-minded people. They run those businesses as if they're their own and it's their money. And obviously there isn't, you know, yesterday, which reminds me, did Behan give that $100 out yesterday? Sorry, brain dead here.
Tell everybody what that's about.
So yesterday I got out $100 and told the servers in this restaurant, whoever upsold the most got a $100 tip. And I'm just sitting here thinking about that, which is really weird. How do you remember things? Right. So I think like-minded people, I like younger people in top leadership roles because they think very differently. Mm-hmm. I'm almost 55. I have a guy that's 68, 70 years old who runs my food company, and he's very old school and he's amazing. But then when you, especially nowadays, we're kicking in COVID kind of kicked in the restaurant business, and my restaurant in Vegas is still closed, but everything else has grown exponentially because of it.
Yeah.
Which is really weird.
Wait, tell more about that. Why?
The food. Well, I think we went into the pandemic. We have a food company. Everybody went out. You know, it's the first weeks we couldn't get toilet paper and paper because people were hoarding. Well, they did that with food. They did that with snacks. Right. Mm-hmm. So I can tell you Fit Crunch doubled in the first 2 months in sales of COVID because we grabbed like it was... It grabbed it like it was going out of alcohol. 25,000 cases of alcohol. Mm-hmm. That's more than I did last year totally in 2 months.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's that, right?
So
this is the one industry that I told. So for anyone listening, Brian, my husband, is a restaurateur also. And we always used to say, I remember back during 9/11 when, you know, things shut down. We always said, well, people will drink when they're happy and they'll drink when they're sad. And this was the one instance with COVID where no one saw this coming because a lot of people are sad right now, but they can't go out and eat and do the things that we normally do. And to see that industry that we thought would never really get hit by something like this, getting hit was a blow.
Yeah.
But I think the government needs to, and it's not, listen, this is not political, period, because I don't get into that stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, I except Gail does, but that's, she's going to be quiet now. I think the government has to step in and the Restaurant Act and putting money into these restaurants. If you look at New York City today, 63% of restaurants in New York City alone are closed.
It's awful.
And they're right now in Pennsylvania, they're suspecting 70% of restaurants will never reopen again after this because we're not giving them help.
Right, they need more aid.
It's not only that they can't eat indoors, and we talk about this on the show. How do we replace the money if you're 50% capacity, 25, 75, whatever, from what you used to have? There's only so many hours in a day, and I feel that we need more support for small mom and pop, and you've seen big chains go out of business also, but mom and pop, they don't have tons of money in the bank.
And it's their life. Their whole life is put into these restaurants.
Most of them are check to check.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be real about it. Most of the restaurants we visit are check to check. I mean, not the bigger ones.
Right, and then, or even relief to some of these landlords so that they can pass that on to the restaurant.
Right, because even if your restaurant is closed, you have to pay your lease, your mortgage, your rent, whatever it is, and that's impossible.
Yeah.
Well, look at, we say this all the time again, and I keep saying that, but you take a dollar, and a dollar sitting in your pocket, I don't care if you get a stimulus, right? Because what do we do with that? We hold that money in our pockets to pay the bills that we have.
Right.
Normally, that dollar would be spent going 13 different ways, farmers, grocery stores, a trucking business, dairy farmer, you name it, that dollar is worth something. Right now, the dollar is worth nothing in our pockets because we're holding on to it to pay the bills that we've got. You know, nobody's out there making millions of dollars except, you know, you know, the Jeff Bezos of the world, and you know, whatever. And I don't begrudge them that, because they've done their homework. But you know, I think that we've got to do a better job of running small business. I work with a small business government body, and we got to do a better job of that, because there will not be mom and pop restaurants. We'll always be in a job. Restaurant Impossible will run forever. And I say that tapping the table here, yeah. Hopefully. But there'll always be restaurants that we need to help, or any other business. It's not just restaurants. It's business
in general. It's a complicated industry. What's next, Robert Irvine?
Well, I've got to tell you, in COVID, we did 18 shows of 10 back to business and 10 after shows, which you know because you're on them. I was so proud of the team that put their own safety mm-hmm. in somebody else's hand to get on a couple of buses and travel the country and go and see the families that we did. And when we do the show, Restaurant Impossible, the real show, it's intense. It really is, because you're finding stories and the listeners, they know that, or they should know that I don't know anything about the restaurant. You know, I find out right. when I'm there, when they tell me. But going back in business, we knew the families. It's almost like going back to see your own, and I mean that most sincerely, your own family, because we have such a relationship and we keep in touch, you know, with name it. I mean,
every single one of them.
Every one of them, right. Mm-hmm. So when we went back, it was really special because we really did make a difference. Mm-hmm. Now we're back on the road with Restaurant Impossible. Again, it's like we didn't drop a beat. Right. I tell you, yesterday's show was epic in that the story was great. Just the tears, the emotion, the design, which you know was amazing because I told you that already. It's funny because I
revealed on time.
Because I always say, you know, this is my favorite. You know, I've got to say that now every episode because every time we do a show, they get better and better.
And you wouldn't say it if you didn't mean it. That is the truth, because you're not just saying it.
I think we've got so good at what we do, mm-hmm. The designs, the builders. I know Tom was at home because he's having a baby. His wife is Erin, who used to be one of our producers. Right. So that's pretty cool.
All the relationships that have
come in. Yeah, I take credit for that. Not the baby, just the
relationships, right.
But
I have to say that I went out with you, obviously, on Back in Business, and I've been on this show since season one.
Yep.
I was really nervous to come out for this one.
Because
of COVID, because we had a big crew, because nobody knew what we were walking ourselves into.
And you had just been home for months right. and months and months.
Well, when you say a big crew, okay, we had 12, we're back in business, crew. And now we have 35, no volunteers. So camera guys, sound guys, producers, PAs, et cetera, everybody's doing that job, right? What were you nervous about, though? Because I
think I was nervous that we weren't going to have volunteers and that everybody stayed safe and just overseeing everybody and making sure everybody felt comfortable. And
well, you are the mama on set. Like everybody comes to you. You are mom to everybody. But yeah, I mean, I can see where you'd have some anxiety about it. There's just a lot going on and trying to make sure.
Oh, we have to make a show,
right?
Yeah, but what did I say about that? I'm like, for me, it's no different to Back in Business. More people got it, and yesterday proved exactly that. And there's a lot of planning, don't get me wrong. I totally understand that. But it was just like we'd never missed a beat, and it was perfect. And to be honest with you, we finished early with no Tom, right. And COVID.
And no volunteers.
So, Tom, sorry, dude.
Sorry. We know where we can trim the budget. I would die without Tom, though.
Yeah. So I think, he called me. I think so there's that. We've got more. I've just signed a two-year deal with an extension of a year with Food Network and Discovery.
So exciting.
To not only do many more of our eyes, but some other projects, Dinner Impossible, a cooking channel show, and a few other things, which is great because I love doing TV, not for money, because it's not about money, because we don't get paid that much, just so you know.
Right.
But anyway.
People, that's a big misconception. Yeah. People don't think television personalities
make a lot
of money.
They also think it's glamorous, and I'm about to go to the laundromat in about a minute. So
I thought you said Gail was going to do that.
Right. Yeah, Gail's going to do my laundry.
Gail's been asking for things to do.
Yeah, she wants to.
So I think there's that. Our lives, all of us here, and I'm blessed that I've got Gail that supports me to do what I love, which mm-hmm. is the military, the shows, and, you know, the food business is doing great. The liquor, we're going into canning now.
Canning.
I think
like, you know, yeah. You know, more,
right now. So we have the distillery. We're going into canned drinks and whatever. But I think it's more of the same. For me, I take on a lot of projects because I want to give more money away. You know, mm-hmm. the more money we give away, the happier I am, believe it or not. And I would never have said that 10 years ago. I'm like, you want to what?
Right.
Yeah, grab it all, keep it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And now, you know, every show we give away $4,000 on social media. And it's like I'm giving away really? Christmas.
Seeing in front of your eyes and being part of a process where you change someone's life literally, you know, that feels good.
And amen, sister.
You know yeah. what a difference it makes in the world. And just that one family, one week at a time, it makes such a huge difference. And it's so inspiring to your viewers and everyone that meets you guys. So
well,
you know you're doing a good thing.
You're so, so on the mark about that. And it's one of the things that this is where I'll end up getting very sappy with Robert. But so we've been doing the show now over 10 years. Which is crazy mm-hmm. to think. And I came into the show 10 years younger. And in this industry, in television, it's really hard to find people, especially a host of a show, to be so caring and genuine and like to teach you. So you are hard. And when people always say, you know, the number one question, what's Robert Irvine really like? Mm-hmm. I always tell them that you're one of the most gracious, giving, kind people I know. And you take time. So if you're angry about something, it's not that you're mad at that person necessarily. Maybe you are sometimes, but not necessarily. You just want to help them get it right.
It's
so you're
more
straight.
Of a situational anger, frustration, not anger. Cause,
right,
you
right.
know, for me, it's we're all trying to do the best we can do with a situation. And when if something's not done to the best, and that's what I'm really proud of since we started this show. And I remember back when we did Velaris and we used, you know, paint on somebody's back and all that sort of stuff. When we do this show now, and we're all the same from a television standpoint with Jill, from a design with you, build with Tom, you know, we can't leave it if it's not perfect. I don't care, you know, that's just the way we all are.
Absolutely.
Because if we can't leave it better than we walked in the door, then I don't want to do it. What's right. the point of doing right. it? You know, when people say, oh, it's, you know, and it started off 2 days and $10,000. Well, guess what? We've doubled that budget a long right. time ago, you know, to be honest.
We don't say it anymore, right?
We don't, because we don't know what, when you pull down that wall or you take that wallpaper, what's going to happen? I remember, and you probably won't remember this, but when we had to dig the hole in the kitchen, it was 5 foot wide and 5 foot deep because the gas main. Do you remember that?
I do remember that.
That's so funny. You remember?
I do remember one time, too, when Tom fell through the floor. Do you remember that?
And it cost more to build that hole or dig that hole than the whole budget.
Oh, my gosh.
So,
yeah. I think that's great, too, because even I remember one couple in Virginia or something like that, and they had an option of doing Gordon Ramsay's show or yours. Mm-hmm. And I had a conversation with them, and the expectations of these people who need their lives changed, they think, oh, they're just doing TV. They're going to come in here and do the bare basics and whatever. And the effort that you all put in to make it so great, it blows them away on another level.
Yeah. And here's the thing. You're not just helping the people that own the restaurants. When I'm talking about how you've changed me personally, and even I was watching, it's interesting, yesterday when we were setting the restaurant up, and Matt Whitaker, one of our producers on the show, when he first started, he was a little sweet wet noodle. And you terrified that kid. I mean, really, I think he went home with stains in his underpants every single night, right?
He would probably tell you and Gail watch them. But anyway. No,
but like to I watch remember. Him yesterday, you diverted to him because you trained him. You were hard on him, but he stood the test of your verbal beatings, I guess you could say.
It's so
say.
Funny because we talked about this, Jill and I, a couple of days ago, you know, how we watch people grow and how, you know, Jesse and all these guys have come. Jesse, the camera, you know, started mm-hmm. with us 7 years ago, and now he's directing the show. And, right. you know,
I said to Robert, I'm so proud of
him. Yeah, it's, you know, and it, when we started the show, it was all, you know, different company, obviously, but it was all anger and yeah, you know, and nobody, we all cared, but not like I think we do now. Mm-hmm. And to watch Maddie and the montage of Maddie after the after show. Maddie, where's Maddie? Where's Maddie? Where's Maddie? You know.
Well, when you find somebody that you can rely on, that's your go-to.
And, and Maddie is that. And, right. And it's so funny because I trust him not only to do his own job, but he expedites food. He does all the things that you don't see on camera, but without them, we couldn't do the show.
But you saw something in him because he wasn't like that. He was so timid and nervous all the time, and you saw something in him.
It reminds me of Tony and mm-hmm. Jason. Yeah. In a group of people, you find one or two.
And Robert's so good at picking those people out. Mm-hmm. People you don't even realize are there. He knows immediately who the workers are.
And it's all about attitude.
That's it. Who cares? Who actually care about it? You can see that and feel that.
But I watch, I'm diverting a little bit, but I watch Gail when she wrestles, always teaching or teaches these girls now or listens and sets up these things. It's the same in her business as it is in our business. You find a talent and you're like, oh, I want to help her mm-hmm. because they have the right attitude. They want to learn and they want to grow. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think Maddie is. That's what I think Allison is. That's what I think, the whole team, what was Maddie Boats? We call him Maddie Boats because he lives on a boat. And we got Maddie. We got Maddie Spellcheck and Maddie Flowers. They're the same person. Everybody has a nickname on this show. But, I look at Maddie Boats, who used to be a camera assist, right? Cleaning the cameras and making sure the batteries and all that. And now he's shooting because we give them a chance to come out of the shell and prove themselves. Mm-hmm. The same as we did with Lynn. Remember when Lynn came?
And Lynn was sweating through his clothes.
Do you remember when he came?
Of course. I'm the one that brought him in.
Uh-huh. And we have a habit of bringing people in and just watching them, right? Do you jump in? Do you help? Or do you stand back and just wait? Because then if you stand back and wait, good to me.
It's not an act, I know, but are you scary, Robert, to test people a little bit sometimes in the beginning?
No.
He doesn't want to trust. He doesn't want to put his trust in you until you've proven that he should trust you.
And you know me so well. Well, you don't at the moment, obviously. But I'll say hello to people, but I don't want to talk to you. And in my own restaurants and the business I have, I won't talk to you for 4 weeks, 5 weeks, because I don't know if you're there to work, you're there to, I don't know what you're there for. And you're right. You have to prove something to me. Right. Because I say this with Justin and all my guys. I work every day of my life. I'm 55 years old in a couple of weeks, and there's not a day I don't work, right? So if I'm doing that, I expect you to be the same as me.
100%.
And, you lead by example, and I think that's how Jill's been with me for 12 years, not because she wants to, just because she needs a job.
Well, Robert is he rewards all those things, just like you were talking about all the promotion.
Loyal.
Yeah, he's very loyal. Mm-hmm. And he will fight for you.
Right.
And also, even with strangers, let's say we're at a restaurant just dining in. If you do a crappy job, he's going to tell you. But then if you do a great job, say our server, he'll go to the manager and say, you need to pay this person more. And it happens quite a mm-hmm. bit.
Yeah.
He really respects hard work and being open to learning.
And I know this about Robert because it took me months of working on this show for him to actually talk.
Oh, really? And know your name.
It's so funny. We just talked about this.
This is what happened. I'll tell you the story. Okay. We were at scrimmages.
Scrimmages, I remember.
It was pretty early on. It was like season 2.
Yeah. I only remember by the design. I remember baseballs or something. Baseball bats.
Baseballs and chairs. In the holes of the chairs.
Yeah.
Wait, and so that was season 2. So I hadn't known Robert that long.
Although she'd been in an edit room watching Dinner Impossible for years.
I did post-producing for Dinner Impossible for a lot of years.
You don't have to tell him that part.
Anyhow.
She thought I was an asshole.
I had to listen to him. I didn't meet him. Anyway.
He has softened up a lot over the years.
He might have been by then.
I'd like it to say it was because of me. No. Anyway, he was sitting outside. We had a very hard shoot. It was raining. He was sitting outside on a bench just staring off into the world
yonder,
and I thought, I'm gonna go out there and this is my time. We're gonna have a moment. I could tell. So I go outside, I sit down next to him, and I said, how you doing? You know, what's on your mind? And he didn't even look at me. He stood up and walked back inside.
No,
like, oh, crushed.
How was that moment for you?
I was like, guess we're not friends yet.
That's very true. It was a true
moment. So how long did it take?
I don't know. I don't actually
before
know.
Before you broke him.
I don't know. I don't remember
how could
when
you
he
not love this
I don't know when
face.
He actually started to talk to me, but it, you know
not
what?
Not even about the face.
The thing is, I think what he, I know, well, I fed him. That's why he started to like me, yeah. is I started to realize that nobody was paying attention to him. Mm-hmm. They were like, work, 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 work. And since I was sort of new and observing, and I also had little kids, and you realize if your kids are cranky, they're either tired or they're hungry. Aww. And I realized, this guy's just hungry. Nobody's feeding him. Aww. So I did go up to him and say, did you eat? And he said, no. And I said, can I get you lunch? And he said, yeah. And I think that's
that
what
was the moment.
It. Yeah.
There was the moment right
there.
There
was a few moments before that. But, it's... Yeah, and that's a very true story, the hangry moments. nobody come near me.
Was that
nobody
a good that was me. Good info for you, Gail.
Well, she knows that anyway.
No, I mean before. Not obviously, she knows now.
But we did this show to start with. You're right. We 48 hours. I don't eat. I don't sleep. I'm not good. When I think of something, especially in the middle of the show, I'm up all night. It's just one of those things, especially when there's something niggling me about the family or I can't figure it out or, you know, whatever. And Jill did feed me, but I go back to before that was the work ethic. You know, if I'm working, why are you not working? Mm-hmm. And I know we have union rules of cameras and breaks and, you know, we've had these guys we've had for years and they do have the lunch, but we move it back and forth and they're great. And, and again, everybody on this show, and I can't say that about previous, you know, when we first started, I can't say that. I can say in the last 7 years, you know, since Jesse, obviously we've been together for a long time, and a few other people. But since then, we've got such a team now that they care. Before it was a job to a camera guy. Now,
but it
now
all starts here with the leader, right?
But when you listen to, you know, Crash and the camera guys, Crash is a camera guy, he's an amazing guy, but when you listen... how it affects them in their life. Mm-hmm. They said, we've been doing, and I asked this yesterday, I'm like, what's the best TV show you've ever done? And what's the most meaningful? Not to get a reaction about Restaurant Impossible, but it's so interesting how it changes their lives when they see the same thing, but they're looking through a lens and capturing it. And I don't see it. And sometimes you don't, because we're all doing so many different things. Mm-hmm. They see it. And it's really transformational for them. And Gus, our sound guy who came on, and Jeremy, who's in Vegas right now. But, you know, it affects them personally. And that, to me, is amazing. We you know, we talk about food and the industry, right? And how we can change people's moods based on food. And we just proved that with Jill and me, right? But this show has changed their lives in their own personal way. So I think it's really cool.
Right. There's one thing that I really want to know, because you just... tapped on it when you said you lie awake at night sometimes because you're trying to figure out what's the issue and how to get into their heads to unlock that that code. How do you do that? I don't know how you do it. I mean, it's a gift right?
I think when you spend and the viewer sees right, the viewer sees a piece into the like a tunnel into their life for a couple of seconds. But what they don't see is when we go off camera and there's no camera there and we sit and you talk and you find out more and more and more. And there are issues on families that we never talk about. We had a girl that was raped. We had a family that had a young son trying to commit suicide. All these things that we can never tell you about, or nor should we, because
right, it's not
really
our story
none of your
to tell.
Business.
Right.
But then it's our job to make sure that we take care of those, right, outside of television, to make sure, and I know this for a fact, that Jill gets 1,000 emails, and I mean that, or texts from people that we've done shows with, still to this day, and that's what I'm most proud of, that we keep in contact with these folks, you know, Lou and Big Lou and Jen, and we did Jen's show 7 years ago. We went back a year ago. She, you know, from $300,000 taking a debt, and then all of a sudden she's doing $2.7 million a year, and she's running it. Even in COVID, I mean, without us, right, she would text me and say, oh, I'm going to put a patio in there and I'm going to put a thing. I mean, I'm like, okay.
How many text messages do you get a day from people? Your text phone must blow up.
You know, we've done something really interesting. I give my phone number out to a few people, but not many. But then I send it all to Ryan or Justin, so they get that.
So their phones, you know, are
so they get it. But it's nice when Jill will send something that somebody sent to her, and I always send it to the network because I think they need to know the impact
yes.
this show. It's not a television; it's an impactful show, and they know that. But I want them to see it with people. And we had one last week from Little Lou.
I was very
in Perella's in
Rhode Island.
Rhode Island.
You were there,
you know.
That was that was one of the ones I did, yeah.
But you're right. But mm-hmm. his son sent a note, an email, saying he didn't realize how impactful this show was. He thought, you know, it's two old cronies, meaning me and his dad. We're going to get together, beat each other up, right?
Which it all cut it, almost started out like that.
It was.
And here it is, and he's about to move, and he really realized what the show was and how we care. And it was just such a, for
and
me.
And he said something that I thought was so special, which was, you know, he watched a actual friendship emerge.
Yeah.
And it was just so, it's so sweet to hear how people react to
he
it.
Because he was a tough nut to crack. And that's the thing where I think there's a special knack that you have. So does that come from when you were a kid? Like, where is this coming from? You never took psychology classes. I know you have two daughters. I don't know.
No. I mean, yesterday in the show, and I couldn't, we can't, you sit on air, right? I'm like, you know, you got to get your head out. You can
say it. It's a podcast. Yeah. You can swear all you want.
Well, you got to get your head out your ass and figure out. And these are moments I have with the people, male and female, that we don't tape, it's actually taped because I'm always mic'd, but it's a real moment when they realize you either got to shit or get off the pot
right.
because this is what's going to happen whether you like it or not. When we open this door tomorrow, people are going to come and we're going to feed them, then we're leaving.
Mm-hmm.
Then you've got a choice.
They're on their own.
Do you, you know, and we can see the restaurant we did last night right from my window.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So do it or don't do it, but don't smoke and mirrors me because when I'm gone, it's not going to work.
Well, and that's what we learned, too, from a lot of these revisits, is that the hard work happens after you leave. Mm-hmm. You can only set them up and show mm-hmm. them how to do it. It's really up to them whether they take those lessons and run with it and be successful or they just, I can't do anymore.
Yeah. And Robert, you have a really good knack, a zero tolerance policy for BS.
It's like you can BS see right through, yourself.
But you can see right through it, you know?
Well, like, I've got to tell you, we've you talk about friendships with Lou and Glenn and Sonny and Bridget and all these folks
Denny.
that I have created friendships with. Mm-hmm. And I mean friendship. Like I get texts, I get calls.
And you're talking about
Lisa
restaurant
Keith,
owners.
Restaurant but, owners yeah. from the show.
Mm-hmm.
Keith and Lisa from upstate New York. And all these folks that just, hey, and Gail was in the phone when Keith called the other day. And he's like, I'm just fed up. I can't keep my staff, you know. We're doing this, we're doing that. And I said, dude, you're killing it. I said, you call me anytime, whether you're fed up or not. He's like, really? When I talk to you, you reassure me, and that's all I need.
Oh, that's nice. You guys, I love you so much, and thank you for doing this with me. Gail, I'm like so happy that you did this with me as well. And Robert, I tell you all the time, it goes without saying, I love you with all of my heart. You're like my big brother. I get emotional every time I say it.
She does. I know if it's your time of your age or something.
Definitely perimenopausal.
Every time you know, she has a cry, she's crying every episode. Just like
I never cried in the beginning, and now I cry every single episode. Yeah. But you know what was different about yesterday was that we didn't do the little huddle that we usually do afterwards.
There were no volunteers.
I know, and I know, and it felt different, you know. So I didn't get to cry yesterday. So I'll cry now.
Today.
No, but we had two people that did cry. And that was the most important thing because,
right.
you know, from a legacy restaurant to a brand new restaurant, and I'm not giving it away, but, and their story, they cried because they were blown away.
Right.
So, well, hey, that's what we do.
Yeah. Thank you guys. I love you.
All right. Listen, Tanya Nyack, visit the restaurants. This is Robert Irvine signing off the Nyack podcast. See ya.
The Break with Tanya Nyack, a Mudhouse Media production.